Uh-oh, you know, they were set up for 7,000 seats tonight on Raw. Apparently, they only sold 6,400. What's going on? I mean, is this it? Is the hot streak over? Holy shit. I mean, we're so used to hearing about them selling out or they have 50 seats left. That was the biggest surprise when I looked to see how many tickets were sold for tonight's show. I just wanted to see where they were. I saw they were in Evansville, Indiana. I don't know how strong of a market Evansville is, although the crowd sounded decently loud tonight. I don't know, man. We actually got a very different main event. Believe it or not, we have been inundated by main events with The Vision or The Usos or LA Knight week after week after week after week after week. And tonight, we had none of that in the main event. They actually gave us a main event with the ladies. The ladies, of course, being the ones who really saved the day at WrestlePalooza or MidPalooza or whatever you want to call it over the weekend. They helped make that show passable on Saturday. We had Rhea Ripley and Asuka, which they kept talking about how this is a WrestleMania caliber main event. It was actually a WrestleMania main event. I have no idea why they didn't draw any attention to that. They did actually have a WrestleMania match many years ago, but in WWE, it's as if it just never happened. But we had Rhea Ripley and Asuka one-on-one in the main event tonight, and it was an excellent match. They had a hell of a match until the finish. We had some goofiness at the finish, which you had to expect. Not surprised, you know, given the story they're telling. But up until that point, they were having an excellent bout that Rhea Ripley won. And the key is what happened after the match when it was over, which was officially the heel turn of Asuka. Now, Asuka has been acting heelish now for weeks, but this was the official heel turn. And she misted Rhea Ripley in the face. And she got her good. Let me tell you, she got Rhea good, so much so that when Rhea Ripley was shown on camera there at the end of the show, take a look at this. This woman looked like a Smurf. That is how powerful the green mist of Asuka is. This woman looked like a Smurf when this show was over. But we're going to talk about all the shenanigans that happened with the women tonight, because this was a major turn here in this story that has been playing out over several weeks now, a few months, really. That is not to say that LA Knight was not stuck in the usual vortex that, unfortunately for him, he has been stuck in now for quite some time. LA Knight was in very familiar territory. I'd like to just, and I've done this before, but the list has now expanded. So I feel the need to update this list just to give you a sense of the kind of summer that LA Knight has had for himself as we head now into the fall. LA Knight against Seth Rollins. Keep track here. LA Knight and CM Punk against The Vision. LA Knight against Bron Breakker. LA Knight and Jey Uso against The Vision. LA Knight against Bronson Reed. LA Knight and Jimmy Uso against The Vision. And tonight, wait for it, we had LA Knight against Jey Uso. This is what LA Knight has been doing now for the last 7 weeks here on Monday Night Raw. That is what Raw has looked like for one LA Knight. Of those 7 matches, I should point out to you that he has won a grand total of 1. He took another loss tonight to Jey Uso. 1. That is how many wins this man has to his name. At least we know what the L stands for now in LA Knight. If we didn't know before, now we know. So we'll talk more about that. Seth Rollins was on this show. Cody Rhodes was on this show. They both happen to be the top champions right now in WWE. Cody Rhodes, of course, got a win over Drew McIntyre at WrestlePalooza, and Seth Rollins did not defend his World Heavyweight Championship, although he did take a loss on that show. Very odd that they barely even mentioned. I don't even know if they did they really even get into at any point the fact that CM Punk and AJ Lee beat Seth Rollins and Becky Lynch? I mean, I know they had like an opening video package, but hardly even mentioned. CM Punk and AJ Lee not on the show tonight, by the way. But their win was barely even mentioned. But the focus was more on Rollins and Cody because they are now set up for Crown Jewel. It's Crown Jewel season, and we're getting champion against champion in Perth next month. And so now these two are on a collision course, and they are rekindling their old rivalry from many years ago. And they actually opened the show, so that'll be the first thing we talk about here in a little bit. I enjoyed the show tonight. I did. I thought that it was a solid effort. You know, we got some good matches. Again, an excellent main event. And they moved the key stories along that they had to move along. One person also who is not on the show tonight, not just CM Punk and AJ Lee, Roman Reigns obviously is gone for a few more weeks. Although I do believe Roman Reigns is done filming next week. So the date that I had heard from PW Insider many weeks ago was September 26th. So I don't know if that means he's going to be back on the show next week, but Roman Reigns could be back on Raw as early as next week. So his Street Fighter filming should be wrapping up imminently. None of these people were on the show tonight. John Cena was not on the show tonight. John Cena was very nearly squashed, right? It wasn't a total squash, but it was basically a debacle. On Saturday at WrestlePalooza, he got destroyed again by Brock Lesnar. Yes, you have not woken up in a time warp. It is 2025. Brock Lesnar destroyed John Cena. And, man, the things I could say about it. I mean, I had a lot to say already on the podcast about it. I just wanted to point out, though, John Cena tweeted at 6:30 p.m. this evening, okay, half an hour before Raw went on the air, because this was the second week in a row now that Raw went on an hour early. They're doing it again next week. After that, I think it goes back to normal. He tweeted out at 6:30 a very simple tweet. Cena versus Styles. Thoughts. With the Raw hashtag. And because he put the Raw hashtag in there, there were people who thought we were getting that match tonight. So there were probably some very disappointed people watching this show. But he's putting it out there. Now, it would be very cruel to do that. If you weren't absolutely sure that you were going to do John Cena against AJ Styles. Because I had all but given up on them doing the match. I mean, he's got, what, three matches left maybe, including his retirement match? And it just didn't seem like it was in the cards. The fact that he went not only on Twitter and said that, but on Instagram, where he doesn't write anything, but he just posts pictures, he posted something that would also lead you to believe that he was referring to AJ Styles. It was a picture of, like, something representing an A, something representing a J, picture of a blue jay, and then a picture of, God, who was it? Some character from some show, but I think his name was Styles. Anyway, it looks like we're getting John Cena against AJ Styles. And it could very well happen at Crown Jewel, and the reason I say that is because John Cena is scheduled for Crown Jewel, but he is not scheduled for television at all between now and then. And it could very well just be a case where the match is either, I don't want to say unannounced, because that would be very dumb. But it's kind of like a special attraction match where he doesn't necessarily need to be around. They're not building a feud. It could just be that he's going to have a match on the show. They want to do something special. AJ's a safe opponent to just kind of throw on there if he can't be around to really promote the match or build it up in any meaningful way. I think we could get that match as soon as next month. But for him to go on social media and even mention it, You can't do that and then not give people the match. So I'm happy that it looks like we're going to get it. Not 100% confirmed or you know, when and where it may happen. Of course, my first thought when I saw that, they're trying to deflect from the absolute fucking shit show that has been the last 48 hours of discourse coming out of WrestlePalooza and all the different opinions about that show and the match. And there was news today about that. There's a lot of news going around right now. And I'm sure as the week goes on, there'll be even more reports that come out. There may be reports that come out that refute some of the reports that came out today or confirm them. I was reading some wild shit today. You know, there was stuff that came out from Fightful and from BodySlam.net about creative plans, original plans. Supposedly, originally, John Cena was supposed to win. As recently as Saturday morning, according to them, John Cena was going to win that match and beat Brock Lesnar. Boy, if that's true, something changed. But you watch what they did at WrestlePalooza on Saturday, and the only conclusion that you could come to logically, and I guess maybe logic doesn't really apply in this situation, you watch that and you think, well, we just found out who John Cena's retirement match is going to be against, right? Brock Lesnar. Doesn't excite me. Don't know if it excites you, but how can you come to any other conclusion based on what they did other than this must be building to him, you know, slaying the beast one last time and getting that big heroic win on his way out the door. And then I see Brian Alvarez is reporting on Wrestling Observer Live today that based on what he's hearing, that is in fact not the plan. There is no plan for a rematch between John Cena and Brock Lesnar. They sent these two men out to the ring on Saturday. They had Brock Lesnar all but squash him, and there were no plans to follow up on that or have a rematch. I don't know what to believe. I don't know. Just because this stuff is out there doesn't mean that it's accurate. And don't forget, we're in a time now where WWE, I do feel, is putting out false information in certain instances that they know is going to get reported on and leaking shit that isn't true to make certain people look bad. Is some of that going on here? I don't know. Now, on the one hand, if it's true, great, because I don't have any interest in seeing this run back again. But it just makes what they did on Saturday look even dumber. So there's a lot, like I said, there's a lot of wild shit being reported. What's true and what's not, only time will tell. But yes, give me John Cena and AJ Styles. Stop teasing me and just give it to us. Please and thank you. This is your Raw on Netflix review. It is Monday, September 22nd, 2025. You know, September 22nd. You know, there's certain dates in wrestling history that stick out in my mind, and I'm almost positive September 22nd was the date in 1997 where Raw emanated for the very first time from Madison Square Garden. And that was the first night that Vince McMahon took a stunner from Stone Cold Steve Austin. And I do believe that they had a dark match that night when they went off the air, a triple threat match between Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, and The Undertaker. Cactus Jack made his WWF debut that night against Triple H. A lot of things happened that night. It's a long time ago. 1997. Today is officially fall, says RDH. Happy fall, everybody. I don't know, man. We were supposed to get 7,000 people in the building tonight. We only had, we were 600 short. Is this the fall of WWE? I don't know. I don't, this could be the beginning of the end, guys. I'm going to have to pack it up here. I'm going to have to go find something else to do. I don't know. Those AEW streams, if that's all I got left, that ain't going to cut it. We're going to have to go find something else to do. Hit that like button. Hit that subscribe button. Hopefully you will enjoy your stay here. Super chats are open. I'll be reading them later on. You'll see them popping up on your screen as well as I pause and unpause them.
By the power of Valhalla, it's Vintage Coltar.
Well, you know what? We have to make a mighty sacrifice to the great Coltar, who is with us tonight. Death Scythe coming in with a big one. That's the $51 Coltar. Not to be confused with the $500. Yeah, right. The $50 Gunthar. Hey, Death Scythe, thank you very much. Like I said, get those super chats in. I got to give an early shout out here, not just to Death Scythe, but to Joseph Stewart. I know Joseph is with us. Joseph was dropping not like any big individual bomb, but just so many different super chats. I just have to say thank you. Single-handedly carrying the ship here tonight, it felt like. So Joseph has a lot of questions that we got to go through later, and I will do so, but I wanted to give him an early thank you because that does mean a lot. And thank you to everybody who hung out with me for the WrestlePalooza show the other night. We had north of 2,000 people, so that was very cool. Now, Lillian Garcia, she filled in tonight for Alicia Taylor, who was unavailable. So we had Lillian back doing the ring announcing for one night only. It's Crown Jewel season, which means that it's champion against champion in Perth next month. Man, I'm so trained on saying Riyadh when it comes to Crown Jewel. I almost said Riyadh, but it's not. It's in Perth this year. So we have the WWE champion, technically a SmackDown star, Cody Rhodes, coming out tonight for a promo here on Raw. Cody came to the ring, and he asked the fans what they wanted to talk about. And he flashed his very shiny crown jewel ring. I forgot they even gave them rings. I forgot they keep the belts over in Riyadh. They have that whole WWE, it's not a museum, it's like some kind of exhibit that they have, this really elaborate like WWE exhibit, like something you would see at a Universal Studios. And they keep the belts there. And these belts are just gigantic, these gigantic crown jewel belts that they made. But since Crown Jewel's not in Riyadh this year, I guess they're going to have to ship them over to Perth, right? Because they don't keep them in Perth. They keep them in Riyadh. But they also give them rings since the belts stay behind. So they have the rings all year. Of course, we never fucking see them. There's no mention of them. So they dust them off when it's Crown Jewel time. And it's like, oh, I got a ring. It's like, yeah, okay. I don't hear about this ring the other 364 days out of the year. But since we got to promote this show, it's time to dust off the ring. So he was showing us his Crown Jewel championship ring. He was interrupted, though, before he could talk to us, by the World Heavyweight Champion, Seth Rollins, and the rest of the Vision. And Seth left his comrades at ringside, told them to stay put, stand guard, so that he can enter the ring with Cody, and they could share the ring all by themselves. So the fans chanted CM Punk at Seth Rollins, who was not on the show tonight. He was nowhere to be found. He was not even really mentioned. And Rollins said that he knows what that idiot thinks of him, but what he needs to know is what Cody thinks of him. Cody said that Seth changed his life. It's complicated. He goes, Seth changed his life. He came back at WrestleMania, and Seth had the courage to stand across from an opponent that he didn't even know. Because remember, when Seth had that match, he didn't know who his opponent was going to be that night. He said he changed his life again at Hell in a Cell when he allowed Cody to show what he had deep down inside of him. And Seth changed his career at WrestleMania 40 because he was his shield so that he could bring the WWE Championship home to his family. He goes, it shouldn't be complicated. He just had Seth's wife on his podcast the other day. The better question is, Seth, what do you think of you? It's not what do I think of you. What do you think of you? And then he blew some smoke up Seth's ass and he put him over. But he said that Seth Rollins that he was just talking about is not hiding behind those goons outside. So he's not going to sling mud. He's going to say it like it is. They have their magic crown jewel. What can Cody do for Seth right now? Spoken like a true politician. He said, I mean, he's already basically, like when he's out there, it's like he's campaigning. It's exactly what a politician would say. What can I do for you? That's what he wants to know. So Seth said, Cody may have his ring, but let's talk about the watch on Seth's wrist. He hasn't worn it a single time since Cody gave it to him at WrestleMania 40 until tonight. And he needs to know, was this real? Was it a real gift or was it just a token gesture? Because Cody is great at saying all the right things about him when it suits him. Because in Cody's next breath, he'll undermine everything that he stands for. Cody stands here, he goes on interviews, and he says with a straight face that he is the right person to lead this industry into the future. Cody calls himself the quarterback. So if he really believed that, then what does that say about Seth? The way he sees it, there's only two possibilities. Either Cody doesn't think he's good enough, he being Seth, or he doesn't think that Seth is as good as he is. And those aren't goons. At ringside, the Vision isn't just a group of people. It's an idea about what the future of this industry looks like, and it runs through him. He is the tip of that spear, not Cody. So Cody can be the quarterback, but he will be Seth's quarterback. And if he doesn't agree with that, it doesn't matter, because in 3 weeks, the truth will come out by any means necessary, he said. This is not a two-man show. He is the alpha. Arizona Zombie says, corporate Cody. You know, the more I see him out there like that, it is just a matter of time, isn't it? Again, he's still very popular and gets cheered by the crowds and everything, but we at some point are going to get corporate, you know, kind of corporate politician Cody as a heel. And I think he'll do very well. Cody said he just has two questions for Seth. In the three matches that they've had together, they've all been one-on-one. At Crown Jewel, will that be the case? And more importantly, in the three matches that they've had, more importantly, being the key words here, Seth Rollins, how many of them have you won? That was his mic drop moment. Cody had nothing else to say at that point. He didn't have to say anything else. That was it. He was done. And by the way, you know, he mentioned our matches before have been one-on-one. Will that be the same at Crown Jewel? He brings up a good point. I kind of feel like in this situation, they actually should work it in the way that AEW does with the Continental title. Like, they have Continental rules where people are not allowed to interfere in the match. These Crown Jewel matches, right, as big as they are, champion against champion, brand against brand, right? It's a special occasion. You got a ring and a belt. The same kind of rules should apply. Nobody should be allowed to interfere. Even though it is completely goofy, the idea that you even would have that stipulation. Because if you can have a stipulation for a match that says no interference allowed, why wouldn't every match have that stipulation? Like, if you have two general managers on these shows who can't put their brains together and say, hey, you know what? Maybe we should have that rule in every match. Oh, but we can't because it's pro wrestling and it would kill whatever story devices we have. But just the goofiness of it just always makes me laugh. But there shouldn't be any interference, if we're being honest, allowed in these Crown Jewel title matches. But Cody left the ring and he went to go leave, but he ran into the Goon Squad standing at ringside. Bron Breakker and Bronson Reed. Paul Heyman told them to move aside so that Cody could exit, and they allowed him to do so. So there was no physicality here. I couldn't care less about the gaudy belt that we see once a year. Couldn't care less about the nice ring that he was sporting tonight that, again, we'll hear about and see for maybe 2 weeks out of the entire year. I mean, who gives a shit? What I will say, though, is that at least this year, there is real, genuine history. There's a lot of story and history here between these two men. And it was actually very smart to have, and I don't know if this was the logic in doing this 3 years ago, but when Cody came back to the company in 2022, he won at WrestleMania. He won the following match. I don't remember what show that would have been. What show would that have been? That he won? What was the middle match that they had? Was that Extreme Rules? Or I don't think it was Backlash. Whatever show it was. I always just remember the first match and the third match. Third match being Hell in a Cell. But he won all three of them. And I don't know if the logic at that time was, let's do it this way so that eventually we know we're going to circle back around to this and there's going to be a story there just waiting to be told that Seth Rollins can't beat Cody. He's never been able to beat Cody. We'll come back around to it, right? Because it's smart. It's smart. Here we are now 3 years later and they're already telling that story. You know, every time that we step foot in the ring together, I've beaten you. So can Seth Rollins beat Cody, or is he just unable to do so? Now, they've done similar stories even now in WWE. They've been telling the story about how Rhea can't beat Io. And even tonight in the main event, you know, Asuka can't beat Rhea. But it's just a good story for them to have in their back pocket that they could circle back to. And guess what? Time to pay up. Here we are. It's time to tell that story. So Seth is finally going to get his win back over Cody in Perth. Because I look at this and I say, this is a Seth Rollins win. He's not losing to Cody for a fourth time. Cody was just successful, by the way, at WrestlePalooza. Seth was not. We're heading into War Games. You got to keep the vision strong going into that War Games match. If you assume the vision is going to play a role in the men's War Games match this year, it just makes sense. And yes, I do think somebody will probably get involved. It will not be clean, whether it's the Vision, whether it's Drew McIntyre. Something is going to happen. Someone is going to get involved, which is why they don't have those rules. But I do think Seth Rollins is finally going to end that streak, and he's going to get that win back at Crown Jewel. We had Joe Tessitore and Wade Barrett at ringside, and they were narrating about how the Bronze beat the Usos at WrestlePalooza. Solomonzer is ignoring us. Like a women's U.S. title feud. Oh, man. Don't get me started on that. Hey, Forgotten Son, welcome to the channel. I love that. Solomonzer ignoring us like Triple H. Triple H ignoring a women's U.S. title feud. So, yeah, Joe Tessitore and Wade Barrett, they talked about how Bron Breakker and Bronson Reed, they beat the Usos at WrestlePalooza. So, backstage, Jimmy Uso finds his brother, wants to have a chat with him in the back. It was Backlash. Okay, thank you, Ricky. I wasn't sure what show it was. I don't know. I wasn't sure they brought Backlash back at that point, but I guess they did. So, Jimmy said that, he knows they can beat the Vision, so he was going to go to Adam Pearce to ask for a rematch against Bron Breakker and Bronson Reed, and he was informed that Jay had gone to get his own match. Jay, by the way, he had some tape on his forehead covering the stitches that he had put in his head after the steel chair ricocheted back into his skull and busted him open hard way at WrestlePalooza. So yeah, Jimmy was taken aback when he found out that his brother had gone behind his back to get his own match here on the show against LA Knight. And he said to him, is this a good idea? And Jay thinks that they would have won at WrestlePalooza if LA Knight wasn't the referee of their match. And he thinks the Vision would have taken care of LA Knight if Jimmy didn't tag with him. So Jimmy asked if Jay was trying to blame him, and Jay said, no. We just have a lot to handle. And we'll do it after I body LA Knight tonight. After this, it was the New Day and Grayson Waller against Penta and the War Raiders in a no disqualification match. Xavier Woods wore a gigantic black hat a few weeks ago. Remember, it was almost like a witch's hat that you would wear for Halloween season. That was a few weeks ago because they were in mourning. They've been in mourning for about 5 months now after losing their tag team titles. So this week, all three of them were wearing these giant, ridiculous, oversized black hats. They put the hats on during the commercial break, and so the baby faces all stole the hats, put them on, posed with them. They even did Penta's little dance with the hats on. This all happened during commercial. Kofi Kingston hit Penta with a diving leg drop off the top turnbuckle through a Slim Jim table outside the ring, which the camera missed. Because Xavier Woods was standing right there, and he was blocking the cameraman. It wasn't the cameraman's fault. But they just immediately replayed it after. Eric brought both members of New Day all by himself off the ropes, and he actually walked with them. And then he dumped them down onto the mat, which got a great reaction from the crowd. It was actually very impressive. Ivar went up top, and he went for a moonsault. New Day was able to avoid it. Penta avoided going through another table that was propped up in the corner, another Slim Jim table. He was slung in. He stopped himself. He turns around. Kofi Kingston comes charging in, and he delivers an overhead suplex. And through the table goes Kofi Kingston. Grayson Waller cracked a kendo stick across Penta's back. Penta, though, fought him off and then finished Waller off with an avalanche Mexican destroyer to win the match for his team. A crazy finish. Thankfully, it was the finish. That's a good thing. But they've been doing a good job, though, with the Mexican destroyer and keeping it pretty protected. So I wasn't expecting him to kick out here. I mean, I was just hoping he didn't break his neck. It looked great. And as far as the feud here, I mean, this has been going on for so long now. I don't know how many weeks this has been going on for. I don't even remember what sparked it. Like, I was sitting here and I was like, how did this start? Like, how did the New Day and Penta come to begin feuding? And I couldn't remember. That's how long it's been going on for. I don't even think they remember what they were fighting about. But now, this no disqualification, big avalanche destroyer, another win for Penta. That should be the end of this. I know it won't be. I'm not naive, but this felt like, okay, this is a good place to put a period on this and get this guy out of this and into something else. But the match itself, It was pretty fun, and the crowd was into it. Again, it was your typical WWE weapons match. There was really nothing different about it than you would typically see in a match like this with the tables and the kendo sticks. But the finish was the memorable part of the match. Now, in the back after, Dominic Mysterio walked into the Judgment Day clubhouse. He wanted their help with Rusev. So earlier in the show, when they were showing all the wrestlers coming into the building and everything, they showed LA Knight. He was walking in the back, and behind LA Knight, you could see Rusev throw Dom up against like the equipment cases. It was yelling at him. He wants his shot at the Intercontinental title. It was like a little Easter egg in the background. So here, Dominic is looking for some help. He needs help with Rusev. And Finn Balor and JD McDonagh, they're not interested. And Balor was wondering, where's your friend El Grande Americano? How come he can't help you? Dom was like, well, he's back in Mexico right now. So Balor said, I'm busy. And then he continued fiddling around on his tablet, whatever it was that he was doing. So Roxanne Perez talked JD McDonagh into helping Dom. She said, look, he's a member of the family. You should help him. And McDonagh said, okay, only because it's for the betterment of the Judgment Day. It's what's best for the family. He was going to go talk to Adam Pearce. And Dom's like, oh, I already talked to Adam Pearce and got you a match at Rusev. Thanks, buddy. And McDonagh and Balor were not very happy about this. Elsewhere backstage, Bayley, who was wearing the same jacket that CM Punk wore at WrestlePalooza that said AJ's husband on it, she met with Lyra Valkyria. Lyra was just sitting there minding her own business. And she sees Bayley coming over, and this woman is like traumatized now because she never knows what version of Bayley she's going to get. She's always on pins and needles around this woman. But Bayley is all smiles, and she comes over, and she's being, you know, overly friendly and very surprised to learn that Bayley was not mad at her after Bayley called her an idiot last week for walking into her dressing room unannounced. And Bayley had no idea what she was talking about. Bayley asked her to be at ringside for her match tonight against Roxanne Perez. And Lyra was very hesitant, but she eventually relented and said, okay, I'll be in your corner. Big mistake. During the commercial break, Byron Saxton interviewed Paul Heyman up on the concourse. And he asked Heyman if his appearing with Brock Lesnar on Saturday at WrestlePalooza was an indication that they had reestablished their working relationship together. And of course, Heyman ignored him and instead opted to hype up the Rollins and Cody match. He said Cody's streak comes to an end at Crown Jewel. He knows a thing or two about conquering the streak. So this will be his next streak to conquer, which I believe they will. After this, the Raw general manager, Adam Pearce, pulled himself away from the bar and made his way back to the arena here for this next segment to introduce the brand new women's world champion, Stephanie Vaquer, after her show-stealing match on Saturday. The only real, truly redeemable thing about WrestlePalooza on Saturday, Stephanie Vaquer and Io Sky had an excellent match. And Stephanie is the new women's champion, and they pointed out she is the first South American-born women's world champion in WWE history. Stephanie, and this is a big spot for her, because how often do we see Stephanie Vaquer get mic time in the middle of the ring, right? Not in a bad, she's barely been on the show, right? She talked this weekend, by the way, about she was very sick recently, and that was why we hadn't seen her on the show the last couple of weeks. It doesn't explain why we didn't see her for the entire month of August. That's a whole other story. But she's obviously feeling better. She didn't look sick on Saturday. Didn't affect her performance, that's for sure. But this is a big opportunity for her now to actually cut a promo and address the crowd. And she's talked also recently about taking English classes weekly. She's working very hard on her English. So she talks about how this was her dream and she didn't know if it would happen, but she sacrificed and it finally happened. She also mentioned her father, who they showed in the front row. He was very happy. He even walked into the arena with her earlier in the show. But he was there on Saturday. He was in the front row. They flew him in from Chile, and he was there to see his daughter win the world championship. So he was there tonight as well. Pearce told Stephanie that at Crown Jewel, she's going to be facing the winner of the triple threat match that is taking place on SmackDown this Friday between Tiffany Stratton, Jade Cargill, and Nia Jax. Whoever wins that match is going to be the WWE Women's Champion, and at Crown Jewel, champion against champion, they will be fighting Stephanie for the Crown Jewel title and the ring. So Stephanie said that she'll be there. I assume that meant she'll be on SmackDown this Friday. Pierce said, I knew you would be. And then he introduced her one last time as the new champion, and they shot off a bunch of pyro on the stage. She said a little bit more than that, but that was pretty much the gist of the promo. Look, her English is getting better. You could tell, like, it's still a little bit of a struggle for her. And she talks about that in interviews that she does, where it's like, when she, the way she does it, I thought it was very interesting the way she described it. She is converting the words in her head in real time. Like, she thinks about what she wants to say in Spanish and then takes a few seconds to, in her brain, convert it to English, and then it comes out. So that's how she described that process. And it's still an ongoing, you know, struggle for her. But all things considered, I mean, obviously she's working hard at it. It's improved. You can understand what she's saying. I mean, it's not perfect. It's still broken, but you know what? She'll keep learning and it'll improve and she'll get better and she'll be fine. You know, she's a tremendous talent. She's not just a beautiful woman, obviously. I mean, she's unbelievably attractive, but she's a tremendous wrestler. Like, she's the total package. Her verbal skills in terms of coming out in front of a live crowd and cutting a promo, that's the weakest part of her game, and even that, it's okay, and it will get better over time. And the fans love her. I mean, she's on the main roster now for a matter of months, and she's already one of the most popular stars they have on the entire brand. And she has barely been on the show. So it's only uphill from here for Stephanie. And I'm very happy to see her getting that opportunity. Again, I think I would have waited a little bit longer on that, but they had their story that they're doing with Io, and that did not involve her being the world champion. So Stephanie was walking backstage after this, and she ran into Nikki Bella. What does Nikki Bella do on these shows? She's not in the ring, right? So she shows up, and what does she do? Is she wrestling on main event? She playing cards in the back? Three card Monty? Like, what is she doing? I don't know, but she's always very happy to see people. Oh, congratulations. And she's so excited and happy for everybody else. So she's congratulating Stephanie on her win, and Rhea Ripley shows up and she congratulates Stephanie on her win. And she, in a very friendly way, she reminds her that I'm coming after your title. Stephanie says, I'm ready. So Asuka and Kairi Sane show up. So now here's Asuka. And she's doing Asuka things, you know, she's kind of dancing around here and she's got a big smile on her face. She's got the clown makeup on her face. And Asuka said Stephanie doesn't deserve to be the champion. Nikki said that Stephanie did deserve to be the champion and she would be an amazing champion. Stephanie then told Asuka that she would be thrilled to show her why she's the champion anytime she wants to fight. So Rhea Ripley got up in Asuka's face after Stephanie and Nikki walked away. Nikki is just chilling. She's serving green beans and catering. Yeah, I'll put the question to all of you. Let's come up with the best ideas here. What does Nikki Bella do when she's flown in for these shows and then we don't see her doing really anything of any note on Raw? What exactly do you think Nikki Bella is doing backstage? I mean, catering is the obvious thing. She's got to be doing something. Got to put her to work in some way. So Rhea gets up in Asuka's face. Says, I've been trying to stay out of your way out of respect for Io, but I'm getting very tired of your attitude. Asuka said she's sick of Rhea, and she warned her to stay away from Io, or she would show her why she is not ready for Asuka. Ripley said that she is ready for Asuka, and then she said that they could settle it in the ring tonight. You could hear all the fans in the arena. They popped huge. We're going to get to see Rhea Ripley in action here. And Asuka accepted. So she walks away, and Kyrie grabs Rhea's hand, and she was about to apologize. But before she could apologize to Rhea Ripley, yes, poor Kyrie. And Kyrie ran off to go join Asuka. This poor woman. This poor woman's like a hostage every week on this show. It's terrible. But that's a big match to make, and I was very excited that we were getting an actual main event that did not involve LA Knight or the fucking Vision. That right there is a massive improvement over what we've been getting on this show for the last month, 6 weeks, whatever the fuck it's been. It's been too long. So it was nice. And Rhea Ripley, look, she's been on the back burner for a while now. I don't think she had a single match on the last two PLEs. You give me Rhea Ripley and Asuka in the main event, I am seated. I will be here watching that match. And yes, they had a WrestleMania match. WWE won't tell you that, but they had a WrestleMania match back in 2021. That was that first WrestleMania after the empty arena WrestleMania that they had at the Performance Center. That was 36. Yes, Kyrie, blink twice if you need help. Bayley against Roxanne Perez. You know what I'm going to have to do? I think I'm going to have to make a... What do you think about making a Kyrie super chat? We just hear Asuka just screaming her name. We have a picture of Kyrie with like this terrified look on her face. Oh, man. Bayley against Roxanne Perez. Wade Barrett noted that Roxanne was tied with LA Knight for... This could go any number of places. No, she's not tied for the most number of losses in WWE this year. They're tied for the most number of matches in WWE. I'll tell you what, you know, there are people who will shit on LA Knight and say that, you know, he'll never be a world champion, he'll never, you know, go higher than he is now, which is probably true. But they'll attribute it to his age. You know, he's over 40, he's too old, and they're not going to invest in him, or his body's going to break down. Meanwhile, this guy's going out there. He's having more matches than anybody else on the roster. I don't want to hear anything about the guy's age. He's out there doing fucking leaping elbows off the top rope with a four-way at Clash in Paris. He was on fire that match. He had the biggest spot of the match. I think he jumped from the top rope to the fucking table. He's got more matches than anybody else this entire year. I don't want to ever hear anybody say a fucking word about this guy's age. But he brought up the fact that Roxanne is tied with him and how the experience that she's gaining is going to make her better and better. Yeah, Damian Priest. Thank you. Damian Priest is older. Give me a break. The way some people talk about him, you would think he's walking around with like a walking stick, like Gandalf or something. Like, shut the fuck up. So Roxanne targeted Bayley's left knee heading into an early break. Perez hit Pop Rocks on the floor. She returned to the ring. She was more than happy to take the count out win here. Bayley, though, was able to manage her way back into the ring. Roxanne distracted the referee while Raquel, who was in her corner, pulled Bayley to ringside and kicked her. Lyra Valkyria, who of course was invited by Bayley to be at ringside in her corner, went after Raquel and ran Rodriguez into the ring post. Roxanne saw this and hit Valkyria with a suicide dive out to the floor. Is that true? He's only 2 years older than Cody. Cody is 39, right? I think Cody is on the cusp of 40. I mean, look, we had Asuka in the main event tonight. Asuka's 40. Or 41. I don't know what her exact age is, but I feel like the majority of this, of like the top part of the fucking roster is at least 40. Like, if you want to come up with an excuse why LA Knight can't ascend higher than he currently is, I don't think you could attribute it to the number that's attached to his name. There are other very valid reasons why he isn't higher up on the card. It has everything to do with the fucking booking, but we won't get into that right now. So anyway, Roxanne, like I said, she got taken out, or she took out Lyra with a suicide dive. And at that point, Bayley's demeanor changed. And she grabbed Perez by the hair. She very aggressively pulled her back into the ring. Bayley hit her with a Bayley to belly and then a knee strike. And then a rose plant, and she picked up the win. After the match, Bailey rolled Perez out to the floor. Lyra got into the ring, and she was very excited and happy for her friend, and she was applauding her, and she went and hugged her. And Bailey was not the lovable, smiling Bailey that ran into her in the backstage area earlier in the show. Bailey was not a fan of her putting her hands on her. So Bailey shoved Valkyria to the mat, and she yelled at her for touching her and also said that her outfit looked stupid. So Bailey rubbed her temples at that point like this. She's rubbing like the voices were talking to her. This was me watching WrestlePalooza on Saturday. And Bailey left the ring. The crowd was into Bailey during the match. They were with her all the way, and then they booed her when she shoved Valkyria down. So we are getting the split personality. We're getting babyface Bailey, and then we're getting heel Bailey, and you can't push her. Don't push her too far. You push her too far, you're going to get the heel version of Bailey. It's too early to know where this is going to go as far as can this character, you know, be successful. Is this a character that is going to grab people's attention, hold it, make for great television? Is it going to lead to a championship win of some kind for Bailey? I don't know. It's too early to tell. Is it goofy? Is it over the top? It is, but no more so than a lot of other shit that we see in wrestling. It's all in how they handle it. When they were airing those vignettes where we could hear the voices in Bailey's head, that was goofy and stupid, right? I mean, you're either Lucha Underground or you're not. You know what I mean? You're not Lucha Underground, where you kind of accept that they do a lot of supernatural, goofy shit. That's not what this is. So that was dumb. But I do think there's a way that you can do a character like this and make it compelling. And I hope it works, because for the longest time since she came back from her injury, Bailey was doing a whole lot of nothing. And they didn't have anything really interesting or compelling for her to do in the slightest, you know, coming out of the damage control split. So I hope it works out. It's certainly the most interesting thing they've had her doing in a very long time. Yeah, I mean, exactly. King T in the chat mentions Toni Storm. Toni Storm is just like the textbook example of this. Like, when you go back and look at what she had that breakdown and became timeless, and then all the goofy shit that she was doing, but she made it work. She's got one of the best characters in all of wrestling. You can make it work. It's all about, you know, it all boils down to the material that you're working with and how you, what you do with it on television and the story that you tell with it. Backstage, Jimmy Uso caught up with Cody Rhodes and congratulated him on his big win at WrestlePalooza. Cody asked how Jay was doing, and Jimmy said that Jay was in his own head and he wouldn't listen to him, but he might listen to you if you're willing to talk to him. So Cody said, yeah, I'll talk to him. Cody approached Jay after a commercial break and said that Jimmy was worried about him. And Jay said that Big Jim was always tripping. He told Cody not to worry. Cody said that he knew what Jay felt like right now. He said there were highs and lows, wins and losses. People in their position, they isolate themselves. But Cody reminded Jay that he has his family, he has his friends, and he has his fans. Cody told him, we believe in you. Jay told him not to worry. He goes, I'm going to find my way back up to the top. And Cody said, that's great. He left. And Jay stared at him as he left. It is worth noting that during this segment, I don't know if you picked up on this, but Jay was staring at the WWE Championship. Oh, no. I hope we're not trading one title hunt for another. I really don't want to see that. But I will say this, Jay acting more like a tweener, it is giving him more of an edge to his character that I think he needed. I do think he needed something like that, I think, to keep things interesting. Like, I don't know where this ends. This sort of pissed off attitude that he's, you know, carrying around with him. What's the end goal for it? What does it lead to? If somebody goes heel, I don't see it being Jay. Is it LA Knight? Is it somebody else that he's working with? I don't know. But that's good. That's good. Instead of him just coming out and being the Yeet Man, at least they're trying to add levels here to his character, which is going to make it more interesting in the long run. We had JD McDonagh against Rusev. Rusev was in complete control until McDonagh kicked the steel steps into his legs. McDonagh followed with an acai moonsault ahead of a commercial break. He continued to shine, got some spots in after the break, including a moonsault that only got him a two count. McDonough hit Rusev with multiple clotheslines, could not knock him down. Rusev landed a Machka kick, then he applied the accolade, and Dominic Mysterio, who was out there in JD's corner, gets up on the apron as if he's going to come in and distract or he's going to interfere, but he thinks better of it. He is frozen in fear, I guess, and does nothing. And so JD McDonough ends up submitting. And yes, Robert says JD lasted longer than I thought. I thought this was going to be more of a squash than it ended up being, just because they're really trying to build up Rusev as being dominant. And JD got more offense than I was expecting him to get. So, I mean, it was a pretty solid match for the time that it lasted. But Dom didn't do anything. He got up on the apron and he just froze. And he let his friend get killed, and then Rusev won the match. Rusev would not let go of the hold after the match was over, and Dom just stood there. So Balor ran out, and he gave Rusev a reverse DDT. Before Rusev could get up, Judgment Day escaped. Balor was scolding Dominic. You know, if you're going to help, you need to help. McDonough, who is like half dead here, is in between these two, basically just begging them, please stop fighting. Please stop fighting. So the match was between two heels also. I feel like the crowd didn't really know who to react to. But, you know, it's some of JD's offense they get behind. But, again, it's the Judgment Day. Like, the only person that people will sometimes really cheer for, if they really like him in certain cities or whatever, is Dom. It's a heel faction. So I don't know that the fans knew who to really get behind here. But Rusev is playing the role of, you know, the killer monster here. He's going after the Intercontinental title. I dig that. I still think that, you know what, you put the title on him, that's fine. Sheamus is going to come back around at some point. Right now he's taking a break. They're not doing anything with him right now. He's filming his Celtic Warrior workouts and biding his time when Triple H is ready to finally do this Intercontinental title story with him. Hopefully that's the direction here. Backstage, Io Sky is with Asuka and Kairi, and Io tells Asuka, you don't need to go through with this match tonight against Rhea Ripley. Asuka said the match was happening and she would teach Ripley some respect. She said that she didn't need advice from someone who lost. So Io tried to speak with Kairi after Asuka left, and Kairi said that Asuka is the reason that they were there. And she was hesitant while saying that we have to listen to her. But before she could say more, off she went. Poor Kairi. Elsewhere, Jackie Redmond interviewed LA Knight and asked about the way that he refereed the tag team match at WrestlePalooza. Knight said that he was trying to make sure that Jay was okay. When Jay shoved him out of the way and he took a spear, Knight said that he wasn't trying to hurt Jay, but he would if he had to. Knight said that Jay would get a BFT for his troubles.
Yeah!
That's right. And that's what we had coming up next. It was LA Knight, one-on-one against Jay Uso. Jay came out. He was wearing all his gear is a little bit different now. He's wearing all black. He's got white sneakers, but he's wearing basically all black. Got his full entrance through the crowd, yeeting with the little kids. Knight entered, but as he came down from the middle rope, Jay attacked him before the match officially began. Wouldn't even let the man get his vest off. So Jay was all over Knight until Knight cut him off with a neck breaker. Jay avoided a charging drop kick through the ropes outside and then clotheslined him down to regain control heading into a break. After the break, we saw LA Knight scale the ropes. He brought Jay down with a superplex. Yeah, that's another thing he does. In every match, that he does the leap, the running vertical leap up to the top rope for the superplex. Doesn't look like an old man to me when he's out there. I don't know what people are expecting from this guy. Not enough tope con hilos for you? This week's episode is sponsored by Green Chef. Summer's over, and that means fall is upon us, my favorite season. Mainly because Halloween is my favorite holiday, and that means it's not far behind. That doesn't mean I like stuffing my face with candy corn, though. I don't. In fact, now that the grill is off and the burgers and hot dogs are gone, it gives me a chance to hit the reset button and get back to eating healthy. And with Green Chef, the number one meal kit for clean eating, I can do just that. And you can too. Green Chef makes it easy to spend less time in the kitchen and more time enjoying the fall. And with their new Heat and Eat meals, you can enjoy a delicious meal in just 3 minutes. Green Chef recipes feature fresh, organic, seasonal produce and 100% responsibly sourced proteins to help you feel your best. We're talking real, clean ingredients that help you build lasting, healthy habits without the hassle. Enjoy salads ready in just 5 minutes, protein-filled breakfasts, or nutrient-filled smoothies to fuel your day. With more than 80 dietitian-approved weekly meal options, Green Chef makes it easy to find meals that fit your lifestyle, from Mediterranean and gluten-free to plant-based and protein-heavy to gut and brain health and calorie-smart options, too. The recipes change every week, and with week-to-week flexibility, you can just adjust your plan to match your mood and your schedule. I've tried Green Chef myself, so I can speak to the quality of the meals that I've had delivered to my doorstep. One of my favorite meals I've had was their chicken with basil pea stew, with roasted red peppers and jasmine rice. Just delicious. And you look at some of their upcoming meals on their menu. Pork fillet with lemon dill sauce is a great high-protein option. Or maybe you're a fan of the baked lemon pepper tilapia with feta, if you're counting those calories. Whatever you're in the mood for, they've got it. And as far as getting everything together, it couldn't be easier. They list out everything you need, any food allergens you need to know about, which is important. Even better, it saved me a ton of time before getting ready to go live and talk some wrestling with you guys, since I only have so much time in the evening before getting ready to go to work. But even if you're a 9-to-5 person and your night is wide open, you're probably tired when you get home. The last thing you want to be doing is spending an hour or two getting dinner ready, right? Green Chef takes care of that for you. Make this fall your healthiest yet with Green Chef. Head to greenchef.com/50solomonster and use code 50solomonster to get 50% off your first month, then 20% off for 2 months with free shipping. That's code 50solomonster at greenchef.com/50solomonster. After the superplex, they traded strikes until Knight ducked one and he hit a reverse Death Valley driver. I thought he was going to go for a burning hammer, but it was basically a reverse DVD for a near fall. Jay followed later with a suicide dive and a super kick. Knight responded with a DDT and his jump up diving elbow drop for a two count. Braun Breaker and Bronson Reed ran out. So Knight attacked them both before they could enter the ring. Of course, you can't have an LA Knight match on this show without the Vision. Referee just watched all of this transpire. Just stood by and watched all of this happen. Knight re-entered the ring, but he ran into a spear. Jay followed with an Uso splash, and he got the win. Another fucking loss for LA Knight. 6 out of his last 7 television matches have been losses. And basically all of his recent PLE matches, right? I mean, God, did he have one at SummerSlam? I don't even think he had a match at SummerSlam. Clash in Paris, he lost. Didn't even have a match on the last show. He was a referee. Jimmy joined Jay on the stage as Jay was heading to the back, and Jimmy was like, gotta go help him, man, because he was surrounded. LA Knight now was surrounded by the Vision at ringside. And Jay didn't care, so he left. Jimmy grabbed a chair. He sprinted to the ring. He invited the Bronze into the ring. Paul Heyman, though, told him no. Holding him back, especially Braun Breaker. He looked like he was about to murder. And Heyman was able to calm him down, and they left together. So now this sets up a rematch for next week's show. They've already announced it. It's going to be the Usos against Braun Breaker and Bronson Reed. This time it's going to be a tornado tag team match. So we'll see. I mean, look, I don't know how many times we're going to see this until they move on to whatever the next phase of this is. I understand, you know, you build something up over a period of weeks, but it does get to a point where, and this is, we've already passed that point with LA Knight, where it's like, my God. You know what, though? LA Knight is someone, it's going to be very interesting to see what he's doing in 6 months, because he is a great test case for the importance or lack thereof in 2025. Of wins and losses, because all he does by and large is go out there and lose. But if he can stay popular, or dare I say even hold championship gold at some point, and stay over or get over even more. I think that that will be a very interesting thing to wait and see if that actually happens, because I still believe that, yes, wins and losses do matter. I know Road Dog and certain people think they don't matter anymore. I think they do. In the case of LA Knight, though, for all the losing that he's done, he shouldn't be as over as he is. But he is still very popular. He's like a rare example of that. I do think, though, the more he continues to lose, at some point, that might change. Because people are just going to get tired of it and go, man, we keep investing in this guy and we like this guy and we think that, you know, he could be a champion. He could be doing something really big. But then he just goes out there and he craps the bed every single time. Like, at some point, that house of cards is going to come crashing down. And yet here we are, and he continues to be very popular, which is great for him. But I'm just wondering, okay, where does this go for him? Like I said, get him off SmackDown. He's dying a death on SmackDown. He needs to be on Raw. Now he's on Raw, and it's almost like, I don't want to say he's in a worse position. I don't think he's in a worse position. He's still in a good spot, right? Because he's part of one of the top stories on the show. And he was main eventing the show week after week after week, but it's very uneven because he loses every match that he's in, every time he's in the main event. So I'm just wondering, in 6 months when we get closer to WrestleMania, where does LA Knight fall? Like, when people talk about the WWE title match, the World Heavyweight title match, no one's talking about him. Where does he fall on that card in Vegas next year? Where do you think he lands? Seth Rollins was seated backstage in his dressing room. He was staring at the watch that Cody Rhodes gave him. And Becky Lynch is behind him, and she's pacing back and forth and rambling on about, you know, venting basically about Cody and the Usos and CM Punk and AJ Lee and being the best in the world and the greatest of all time. And it's not just her saying it. Sports Illustrated says it, and Bleacher Report says it. So she told Rollins, you know what, I'm going to go make an example. And she grabbed her title and she left the room, and Seth was still staring and really just not paying attention. She was going to go make an example. We never saw her again for the rest of the show. So make an example out of who or what, I don't know. She got beat by AJ Lee at WrestlePalooza. At some point, you would assume we're going to get an intercontinental title match. I don't know if that means Crown Jewel. But she was going to go make an example, and we never did find out what she was going off to make an example of. Elsewhere in the back, Io Sky approached Rhea Ripley. Rhea Ripley is a grown adult. She is a grown adult woman. And she asked, are we allowed to be around each other? Io said that she needed to call this match off. Ripley said that Asuka had been disrespectful and that maybe they could beat some respect into one another. Ripley told Io to be careful. Please be careful around Asuka. And Io took this the wrong way. She was very offended by this and said, Asuka's family. She questioned whether she could trust Rhea. And she left. And Rhea was like, no, Io, that's not what I meant. And Io walked off. You know, is this stuff very cheesy? Yes, it is. It's a soap opera. As cheesy as it is the best story right now that is ongoing on Monday Night Raw. It's been going on now for a few months, and I think the fans are with it. I mean, you saw their reaction to what we saw at the end of the show, which we'll get into here in a second. Cheesy or not, it is honestly the best story going right now on Monday Night Raw. I'm not saying it's the Bloodline at the peak of the Bloodline story, but it is the best story going on Monday nights right now. They aired a video package for Los Americanos, making it seem like they were a part of Lucha Libre history. They come back live, and Maxxine Dupri is talking to Adam Pearce and asking for a match because I want to be able to prove myself. How many times? I feel like I've seen some variation of this multiple times on TV over the past year. Like, once every 4 months, we'll see Maxxine Dupri talking to Adam Pearce, begging for a match. It's like she's begging for scraps. I picture it like the poor, you know, the animal that goes in the back alley behind the Italian restaurant is just looking for whatever leftovers are there. And, you know, the guy comes out and goes, I got something to for you. And he gives me some food. Like, this woman is just begging for an opportunity, right? But the other thought that occurred to me is, so much for the Dungeon Dolls. Rest in peace, Dungeon Dolls, 2025 to 2000. Remember they made 2025. They made merch for them too, by the way. I'm almost positive they still have shirts up on WWE Shop for the team with her and Natty. I don't think the Dungeon Dolls had a single match on Raw outside of maybe a gauntlet or something, and maybe that's it. So much for that. I guess Maxine is back on her own, and she's trying. She's waiting for a singles, but she'll take anything. Singles match, tag team match. Maybe he can make her a referee. He's made Bianca Belair a referee. LA Knight's been a referee. He can make Maxine a referee. This woman just wants to work. Pierce told her, keep working until I'm going to keep trying to find somebody for you. I promise you, I'm going to keep working on it. So she walks off. AJ Styles and Dragon Lee, they approach Adam Pierce next. AJ said the Americanos were pissing him off, and Dragon Lee wanted them in a tag match next week. Pierce said that he would talk to them. Why does he need their permission? Did I miss something here? Why does he need their permission? Why does he permit this random posse of masked men to keep interfering on his shows week after week? Are these his drinking buddies? Like, what is going on here? Styles told Pierce, maybe don't sign any Americanos anymore. And then he left. Give us John Cena versus AJ Styles, you fucking cowards. I don't give a shit about this. AJ and Cena, before it's too late. Cena's tweeting about it. Let's go. Let's get it done. You want to get a match signed. He can't be bothered with Maxine Dupri right now. He's got a bigger match that he's got to try to sign. He just has to navigate Cena's schedule and try to make it happen. But our main event. What a main event it is. Asuka. One-on-one with Rhea Ripley. Asuka was in control. She was targeting the leg. Ripley came back with some clotheslines, a thrust kick, a drop kick, and a Northern Light suplex for two. Asuka avoided a razor's edge. Ripley responded with a boot and a cannonball off the apron that led to actually what was the second commercial break of this match. Ripley hit a superplex when they came back. They traded strikes until Asuka got a jackknife cover for two. Ripley followed with a thrust kick. She hit the razor's edge. Shining Wizard followed for a near fall. Asuka went for an armbar. Ripley managed to escape, and she missed a charge. She collided with the turnbuckle. Asuka followed with a hard kick to the head for two. So Asuka knocks Rhea out of the ring and bounces her head off the announce desk. Asuka goes over and says something to Kairi before getting back in the ring. Probably, you know, get ready to help. So Ripley tried another kick. Asuka caught her in a leg lock instead. Then Ripley tried getting to her feet, so Asuka turned it into a German suplex. Asuka then came off the top, and Rhea caught her with a deadly drop kick. It was actually a fucking work of art, the way she landed this drop kick, but it was a vicious-looking drop kick out of midair. Asuka then starts shouting some orders to Kairi. And Kairi reluctantly jumps up on the apron on the opposite side, and she's got her fist clenched. And Kairi went for a back fist. Rhea blocked it. Asuka then went for a running hip attack, but Rhea moved. And so Asuka collided with Kairi Insane. Kairi instead, not Kairi Insane. Well, she'll do the insane elbow here in a moment. But she knocks Kairi off the apron by accident. And then Rhea rolls up Asuka and gets the win. Excellent match. Hated the finish. Terrible finish. But an excellent match otherwise. It's just a cheap way to end such a great match. I know why they did it. You know, I get it. But it wouldn't bother me as much, I don't think, if they didn't do this shit in almost every single other match on these shows every week. After the match was over, Asuka wasn't done with her yet. Asuka blows mist, a lot of it, in Rhea's face. And she got her good, too. Again, I'll put this picture back up because it's just too funny, but Rhea, by the time this show was over, was looking like a Smurf. You think I'm lying? You look at that photo right there. So she was burning her eyes. She couldn't see. Her whole face just She looks like she got some sort of weird disease that she picked up on an overseas trip or something. I don't know. But Rhea here clearly is in distress. Now, Asuka orders Kairi to attack, and she did so hesitantly. They attacked Ripley until Io Sky's music hit, and Io Sky sprints out to the ring to make the save. Avatar Rhea. I think they have a new movie coming out. When I went to go see Weapons, they had the trailer for this new Avatar movie. How many years did James Cameron spend working on that one? He's probably been working on that for, what, 12 years now? Has he done anything else in the last 25 years other than working on these Avatar movies? She does look like she's from Avatar. And she's still sexy as hell, even as an Avatar. So, yes, Io sprints down to the ring, and she is begging Io to just stop. Or she's begging Asuka to just stop. She's trying to calm her down. And Asuka's in tears, and they end up hugging. And then Asuka suddenly drops Io with a spinning back fist. The heel turn has officially been completed. And the crowd booed, as they are supposed to boo. Asuka then commanded Kairi to attack Io. Again, Kairi did not want to, but she did. What is this spell that this woman has over Kairi Sane all of a sudden? I don't know. I hope we find out one of these days. Asuka noticed that Rhea was getting back to her feet, so she knocked her down with a spinning heel kick. Asuka held Io as Kairi, still in anguish over all of this, hit an insane elbow off the top. The crowd booed as Asuka stood tall with Io and Ripley laid out. This was an excellent main event. Top five all-time heel turn, says Arizona Zombie. No, it wasn't. But it was an excellent main event. Asuka did officially turn heel. And this now sets up the obvious tag team match. I think you do it at Crown Jewel. I think you do Asuka and Kairi Sane against Rhea Ripley and Io Sky. And then you build to the match that I have been waiting for many months since the story started, which is Io Sky against Asuka. When we eventually get that match between Io Sky and Asuka, it will hit like crack, and I am waiting for that match. I've been waiting for that match actually for a long time. So that is going to be great. But the tag team match comes first. I'm liking the story. Cheesy? Sure. But you know what? All the women involved here are super talented, and the combination of matches left for us to get are great, as long as we don't get it for 7 weeks in a row like we're getting with The Vision and the Usos in LA Knight, we'll be okay. But I am liking this story, and it was nice to have a super main event like the one that we had on the show here tonight. That was a very welcome change, I will say. Here is the poll. What did you think of Raw from Evansville, Indiana tonight? 62.3% thumbs up, 20% thumbs in the middle, and we've got 17.5% thumbs down with just shy of 1,000 votes in. I think we had something like 3,300 votes or whatever in the WrestlePalooza poll. This looks a lot better than the WrestlePalooza poll looks. I'll tell you that much. But you can go vote right now on Twitter. At Solomonster is the place to go. We're 7 out of 10 on that bonus goal in the chat. Let me see where we are in the likes here. 411. Very good. We just passed the minimum goal for Be the Booker. So now it's up to you. We got 3 more left. And we might possibly be doing a double round here tonight. I might be able to book John Cena versus AJ Styles myself before they do. I might be able to do it and Be the Booker. Wouldn't that be something? Wouldn't that be something? All right, let's get into these super chats.
Off is the direction you can fuck.
Oh. Off is the direction that I can fuck. Was that Libido Bell? I believe it was. It was indeed Libido Bell. Thank you, brother. I'm going to get to yours here in a little bit. Go through these questions here. We're going to start with Joseph Stewart, who I will tell you, I will warn you, Joseph has sent in a bunch of questions. Not a lot that has to do with Raw, but that's okay. That's all right. Would you like to see Michael Keaton as old man Bruce Wayne in a Batman Beyond movie? I would love to see Michael Keaton play old man Batman in more of a proper movie and not just like a cameo type situation. I would like to see that. Have you read the Dark Knight Returns comic? I have not. I read The Killing Joke many years ago, a graphic novel, but. Do you think that we are going to see a Dominic Mysterio versus Brock Lesnar match? You know, funny enough, we were supposed to get that last year before Brock got pulled for obvious reasons. Do I think we'll get it at some point? I mean, it all depends on how long Brock's back for. I'm going to say, yeah, probably. Not for a while, but I think eventually we will. Thoughts on Mickie James getting inducted into the TNA Hall of Fame? I think it's long overdue. I think that's a great move. Mickie was a very important part of the Knockouts division. I think it's a worthy induction. That's going to be part of Bound for Glory next month. Joseph says, another $9.99, man, look at this. We got a whole bunch of them here. Do you think Big Show is going to return to WWE in the future? I think he's content right now in AEW. I mean, if he were to come back to WWE, it would be for like a Hall of Fame induction. He's not wrestling. His in-ring days need to be over. He's not wrestling. So I'm going to say no. I think he's content where he is right now in AEW. Do you know why Jacob Fatu is not on television? And when do you think Jacob Fatu will return to television? That's a very good question. And somebody on Friday night had the great idea, and I was disappointed that they didn't think along these same lines, to get him involved in the John Cena Brock Lesnar stuff, where if Brock did win in a dominant fashion and maybe kept attacking Cena, or even if Cena beat him and then Brock attacked him after the match, you could have Jacob Fatu run out to make the save. That would be your way of sort of getting him involved in that story. Now, but just picture it in your head, right? Because I was thinking about this. Cena's being murdered, right? F5 after F5 after F5. This has to be stopped. Somebody has to save this man. Out comes Jacob Fatu. All wild and wound up, and he gets into the ring, and he's kind of kneeling over Cena, and he's looking up at Brock, and he's like, here, try me. Try me, right? And Brock's like laughing, but like that nervous laugh. And he's like, yeah, fuck this. And he leaves. You've now established Jacob like at this level up here. And you've gotten people excited for the eventual match between him and Brock, which is a fresh match that we've never seen before. You've taken this new guy and you've elevated him to that next level. And you've gotten him involved now in this top program, you know, here on TV. And so you're using John Cena's retirement tour in a small way to help elevate somebody who many people look at, as they do Bron Breakker, as one of the future faces of the company. All right? What a great idea. There's a lot of things that would have been better than what they did. That was one of those potential ideas that would have been a hell of a lot better than what we saw on Saturday. Any way to help elevate Jacob, because Jacob is just supremely talented and should not just be, you know, tied down to Solo Sikoa and the MFTs for the rest of the year. But yeah, we haven't seen him on television at all lately, so. But what a moment that would have been, right? Him coming in and then, like, just looking up at Brock, like, what you gonna do? You know? You want to keep messing with him? Why don't you mess with me? Right? Little face-off. Brock backs off. That's how you get people interested and all psyched up for a future match with Brock Lesnar. Joseph says, are there similarities between Bo Dallas's Uncle Howdy and Raven with their gimmicks? Not really. I don't really think of Raven when I look at Bo Dallas. I think of Bray Wyatt. I can't help. I mean, they don't just look alike. They sound alike. The character is inspired by Bray. The only person I think of when I look at Bo Dallas is Bray Wyatt. It's just unavoidable. Who is your ECW Mount Rushmore? ECW Mount Rushmore. Taz. Sabu. Probably Taz, Sabu, Raven, and the Sandman are the ones I would associate most. If you wanted RVD on there, he was the best athlete of the bunch, but I think those would be my four. Have you seen the movie Angel Heart by or with Mickey Rourke and Robert De Niro? I have not, no. You thought I was kidding with Joseph. We got a whole bunch of them from him here before we get to anybody else. But no, I have not seen that movie. Joseph with another $9.99. Have you seen the Punisher movie with Dolph Lundgren as the Punisher? I did not. Which was the one where Kevin Nash played the Russian? Is that that one, or was that a different Punisher movie? Have you seen the movie The Big Lebowski with Jeff Bridges? Of course. The dude. Did you know Clint Eastwood almost played old Batman in the early 2000s in a Dark Knight Returns live-action movie? I did not know that. Joseph says, I miss Dom and Liv Morgan together on television. Yeah, I do too. They were very entertaining together. A few more months, we'll get Liv Morgan back. Do you remember the Batman comic Death in the Family? That's the one Joker killed Jason Todd's Robin. Well, you spoiled it for me now, so now I have no need to read it. No, I've actually not read that one. What is your favorite episode of the Adam West Batman TV series? You know, I feel like I watch most of those episodes, but I don't have a specific episode that really stands out to me. I don't have like that one episode that I remember. Were you a fan of Alicia Silverstone as Batgirl in Batman and Robin? I liked her. I always think of two movies when I think of her. I don't think of Batman. I think of Clueless, of course, and I think of The Crush. Those are the only two movies of hers that when I hear her name, I ever think of. What is your favorite movie soundtrack? Oh, wait. Well, before we get to that, what is your favorite Christian Slater movie? Man, wasn't Christian Slater on Mr. Robot? I only saw a couple of episodes of that show, but I heard good things about it. I'm pretty sure he was on that show. Christian Slater movies. It's so weird. I think about him and I get him and Kevin Bacon mixed up. I'll say, I saw it many years ago. Very Bad Things. It was a movie called Very Bad Things. I think it came out in the mid-90s or late 90s. What is your favorite movie soundtrack of all time? That's actually a pretty easy one for me. I'll give you one. You want a great movie soundtrack? You got to listen to the Tron Legacy soundtrack. I think I got Tron Legacy as my number one. Now, this one, I guarantee, is probably not on any of your lists, but I'm going to give it to you anyway. There was a movie, it came out about 10 years ago, probably. It was called The Guest. It was not like a blockbuster movie or anything like that, but it was called The Guest. That soundtrack is awesome. So if you've never seen the movie, you should see it, but that soundtrack is fucking great. And then if I had to name a third one, I would give you The Dark Knight. There you go. Those are some pretty badass soundtracks that you should all go check out. Young Guns 2 for Christian Slater. I never saw Young Guns 2. I never saw Young Guns 1. Have you seen the movie Death Becomes Her? with Bruce Willis, Meryl Streep, and Goldie Hawn. Yes, I did. Many years ago. Many years ago. What is your favorite Al Pacino and Robert De Niro movie of all time? It's the one that they were in together, actually. The first movie they were ever in together, which was Heat. 1995. Joseph says, I'm so happy to hear Tarzan Boy back on AEW television. So am I. It's a great song. Everyone popped big for the Jurassic Express reunion the other day, and then they were singing the song and they were swaying their arms back and forth to the music. I'm glad that Luchasaurus is healthy again. Because I know for a while there, last year, it was very, very touch and go as far as his health. Buy or sell Home Alone 1 or Home Alone 2? Home Alone 1. We have one more here from Joseph. Believe it or not, we do have other people that sent him messages. Can we say both Uncle Frank and Buzz are the true villains of Home Alone? Frank is just a dick. Buzz was a real asshole, though. It was Buzz's it was his spider, right? His tarantula. Thank you, Joseph. Joseph is awesome. We got Death Scythe. Stephanie Vicaire forgot to say thank you, Jimmy Uso, in her speech. I forgot about that. You know what? You're right. You're absolutely right. She should have. Absolutely should have thanked Jimmy Uso. Paul, Joseph can send in however many questions he wants. Because he's supporting, and I appreciate that. I'll see you on this list. Let him ask his questions. What's your problem? Pipe down. Oh, we got Victor. Here, this will make Paul happy. We have Victor. Has Heyman by now surpassed Heenan? If not, why? He has not. And this is the best way that I can describe it. Heyman is great. Okay. Heyman is fantastic. Very good at what he does. He's managed world champions in the last, decade, whatever it's been. I mean, right. He's been attached to most of the top stories and top feuds in this company. All that being said, he will never be the measuring stick. That's what Bobby Heenan is. Bobby Heenan is the measuring stick when it comes to managers in professional wrestling. There's a reason why Paul Heyman does not call himself a manager. He always corrects people. Like, I'm not a manager. Right? He's a great advocate. He's a great wise man. He's a great oracle. He's a great... all these things. But he doesn't call himself a manager because he knows that he can never be the best manager. But he could be the best wise man. He could be the best oracle. He could be the best all of these other things. And he himself has said things to that effect. Because even he knows. So I feel like it's a lot easier for somebody who is growing up a wrestling fan that never knew Bobby Heenan, and Bobby Heenan was before their time. All they know is Paul Heyman. I could totally understand why somebody would say, no, of course Paul Heyman is number one. Like, even if you became a wrestling fan in the Ruthless Aggression era, that's when Heyman and Brock, right, were first paired off. So if you had no concept of Bobby Heenan or Jimmy Hart or any of these other great managers, but you knew Paul Heyman, and you're like, man, I've been watching wrestling for 25 years, and Paul Heyman was managing the WWE champion even then. In your mind, Paul Heyman's the GOAT, right? No one comes close. I can't say that. It's not true. And the thing is, Heyman would say the exact same thing. He would agree with me. I hope that answers your question. She says, buy or sell 1997 or 2000. You've heard what I've said before about 2000 was the best creative year in WWE. I got to go 1997, though. 1997 was a turning point year for that company. There were a lot of important things that happened that year. There were a lot of classic matches that happened that year that have stood the test of time and still to this day are some of the best matches in the history of that company. And the most influential. 1997 is, for me, it's an easy buy. And as great as 2000 was, I got to sell on 2000. Victor says, what WWE wrestlers have the best list of rivals? Probably most of the top names, honestly. Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, The Rock. Right? Those are some of the obvious ones. Terrible Dried Chicken, Triple H's creative mojo is shot. Jeremy Watley with the five. I enjoyed the opening promo. This is the Seth I want to see. Less cartoonish, more genuine. Enough of the revolutionary nonsense. It's insufferable. It really is. It really is. And the cackle and, you know, I'm the revolutionary. I'm the visionary. It's fucking lame. It's just lame shit. When he gets more serious like that, that's when he's at his best. We saw that with Punk. Him and Punk. That was some of his best stuff. Death Scythe, I bet Triple H said to Brock, Cena's going over, but Brock replied, that don't work for me, bitch. Yeah, if that story is true, I would love to know. That just makes it so much worse. Can you imagine if that story is true? And Cena was going to go over that day. I thought Brock was... My prediction when I did the predictions last weekend was that Brock was going to go over. I thought Brock was winning. But the idea that Cena was going to win until the morning of the show and then they change their mind? Like, we already know how badly botched this John Cena retirement run has been. Like, this retirement run, years from now, will have to be studied. When we look back on this at how they bungled... Okay, because they could still stick the landing, and I hope he gets the retirement in December that he deserves, but the way they have bungled this retirement run is a sight to behold. How they didn't have this mapped out from start to finish, I'll never know. And it all goes back to the beginning of the year, and the stories that we heard, and we saw it on WWE's own fucking Unreal show. You would think that the Cena stuff would be locked in. And they're changing their minds, and Triple H is like, John, what about turning heel? Like, they didn't already have this planned out. This has been the case all year long. It's like they're just sort of, I don't know, it's like they're just thinking of things as they go. How do you book a retirement run for the guy that you refer to as the GOAT of your company? How do you book a retirement run like that? I don't understand it. Now you're changing match finishes the morning of? People are like, well, makes sense. You got to let the story play out because Brock's going to destroy him and then Cena is going to come back and get the rematch and he's going to be... Well, evidently not. Where are all those people now? Blows my mind. This is not some random jabron here. I mean, it's fucking John Cena. I think the problem is that John Cena, frankly, is not as hands-on as he should be, given how big of a star he is. You know, we talk about or we hear about like how hands-off he is and he does what he's told and he's just, you know, so easy to work with and he's got no ego that he brings to the table. Maybe that's the problem. Maybe he needed to bring a little bit of ego into this. But I don't think he cares. I think he's got one foot out the door. You know, he's a Hollywood guy now and... His body is breaking down. He just can't do it anymore. That's why he announces retirement. He goes, I would love to do this until I die, but my body, I can't do it anymore. You know, I think he had his fun and he's just grateful to be able to go out there and do whatever they ask him to do. And when he's done, I believe him when he says he's done. That's it. He's not putting the jorts on, the t-shirt, the hat. Undertaker said the same thing. You're never going to see me walk down to the ring in the fucking black jacket and everything. So when we see him now, he's riding a motorcycle to the ring. Because unless he's wrestling, he will not be the Undertaker anymore. So I believe John Cena when he says that we're not going to see him doing this stuff anymore, because I think he's done. He wants this to be done, and he doesn't care. The fans care more than he does about his own retirement run. That's the problem. Because they've been invested in this guy for 25 years or 23 years, whatever it's been. I think they care more about this than he does. They take it more seriously than he does. C says EO versus Kyrie 6 in the future. EO versus Kyrie. I'm trying to remember the first five. Give me it all, man. Give me EO and Asuka. Give me EO and Kyrie. Give it all to me. Dry Chicken says the Judgment Day and the Vision need dirt and germs. So they get sick and then they have to miss Raw. I see what you're doing there. Death Scythe, we should have Crash Bandicoot as the head of creative. Maybe the Limu from the what is it, Liberty Mutual commercials? Death Scythe as a big bomb here. Actually, let me reload. We've gotten some new ones. Let me reload the list here. So that way we got them all here. Here we go. There he is. Death Scythe. I hope Drew McIntyre is Cena's opponent for Crown Jewel. Drew can do the build alone by insulting him, diving into his past like Angle did with HBK. He could go to Hard Knocks Gym and OVW for a vlog. Cena's dad and Bull Buchanan cameo. Oh, fucking Bull Buchanan, man. Now you're going old school. Fucking B squared. Like, fucking put the backwards hat on. Remember B squared? Oh my God. Fucking Bull Buchanan. Yeah, Robert says you guys destroyed it. That's right. We are doing a double Be the Booker yet to come here. Keep them coming. Interesting that Drew McIntyre is on the poster for Crown Jewel. So he's going to be on the show. Could very well be a match with John Cena. It's just too bad Cena's not going to be around to promote it. It would just be the match. But I would take that. Just like I would take John Cena and AJ Styles. That's why I was so disgusted by the idea that, like, they had Brock squash him, so what? We could run this back another one or two times? No one is asking for that. Give me the match with AJ. Give me the match with Drew. Give me the match with somebody else that I'm not thinking of here. I don't need to see more Cena Lesnar. JDFVA says, goodness, I've got a lot of catching up with your content. I've been so busy lately. Now is a good time. It is always a good time to get caught up with the content. You got plenty of it, JDF. We got Boots with the 10. Even though I tend to rag on Renee Paquette for being an enabler for Mox's actions, I'll give credit when it's due. She was upbeat and professional at the all-out scrum, even though Mox got barbecued. Yeah, but she's used to it by now. That's like every show. She just, at this point, it's like to be expected. That her husband is going to have his flesh torn and there's going to be just gallons of blood spilled. It's just another pay-per-view. It's just another night. We've got John Laurinaitis is with us again. What's up, twin? Don't be twinning me. Yeah, you're my evil twin. You're not welcome here. Abyssal Zones, when does LA Knight's losing streak become burial? That's why I asked the question earlier. At what point? At what point does he start to lose the fans? Because the fans realize that he's just a fucking loser. They realize that they are rooting for a loser. And not even like a lovable loser. You know, the guy has a chip on his shoulder. He's got an ego. That's even worse. If you're a lovable loser, it's a lot easier to get sympathy and get the fans behind you. But when you go out there and you talk shit, right? You pump your chest out, you think you're better than everybody, and you still lose. My God, that's so much worse. Duff's Vids with the $4.99. What kind of pants do ghosts wear? A paranormal pants. Says Mommy Smurf. Yeah, I mean, how is it that Rhea looked like a Smurf and she still looked as hot as she did when she wasn't a Smurf? I don't know. Very impressive. NJC with a $9.99. Did LAP in Hunter's Cheerios? His booking is like no one else I can think of. This is a burial. Justice for LA Knight. Duff's Vids, what's the difference between a well-dressed man on a bicycle and a poor-dressed man on a tricycle? Attire. Man, he is he's dipping into some new ones tonight, I see. And they're hitting. I love it. Boomerang says, a lovable loser like the Mets. Am I right, Solo? There's nothing lovable about them. They're just losers. So you're wrong. Alexander, LA Knight needs the ghost of Chris Candido to rejuvenate his career. Barry Horowitz would be proud. A lot of people think LA Knight's buried. I don't know. He's still involved in one of the top programs on the show. I wouldn't quite shovel the dirt on top of his corpse yet. We're getting there pretty quick, though. I just don't think we're there just yet. Death Scythe. The men's war games should be Brock Lesnar, Drew McIntyre, and the Bronze against John Cena, LA Knight, Cody Rhodes, and Roman Reigns. If it's 5-on-5, you can have Jacob Fatu on the babyface side and Randy Orton on the heel side. I noticed that you don't have Seth Rollins here, which is very strange. I don't know why you wouldn't have him in there when Seth has... I mean, are you pitching another Seth Rollins-CM Punk match? You got to have Rollins. You're not going to have part of the Vision in the match. You're going to have the Vision or you're not going to have the Vision. And the Vision doesn't even have four guys, let alone five. So you got to have Rollins and Breaker and Reed. And then if you want to have Brock, you know, Heyman can kind of bring Brock into it. And then maybe Drew, I could see that. And then on the other side, you've got Cena, you've got Punk, you've got Roman. Cody does not need to be in War Games. Actually, take Drew out of there, because you could do Cody. You can run back Cody and Drew at Survivor Series. You could run back Cody and Drew at Survivor Series and actually have Drew win the title and rope Randy Orton into that easy enough. None of those guys need to be part of War Games. Death Scythe coming in with another super chat. Actually, he's got a pair of them here. Let me see here. It says, and Punk's... Oh, there we go. I should have read your second super chat before I answered the first one. He said, and Punk Seth for the world title should end at Survivor Series, where it is technically where it began in 2023. Make it come full circle. Not everything has to end at WrestleMania. It doesn't, but it probably will. I just don't see it ending there. If they wanted to absolutely just end it there, I'm okay with that. But I don't think they want to end it there. I just don't. And frankly, if you're going to do a title change on that show, Drew could use it a lot more than Punk. I'd rather see Drew beat Cody than see Punk beat Seth on that show. Uffman Entertainment with the show in Australia. Why is it being called Crown Jewel when it's not in Saudi? Well, it's very simple. Because they want to continue the Crown Jewel gimmick. Because they probably... I don't know if they paid. Saudi's probably paid for those nice, gaudy, big belts that they have. If they want that to be an annual thing, they couldn't do Saudi in November or in October. Because they're going to run the Royal Rumble there in January. So there's going to be no Saudi show at the end of the year this year. So for this year only, I'm guessing, they decided to move it to Perth. There's your answer. Death Scythe. Also, I hope we get a program or at least a match between CM Punk and AJ Styles. For example, Punk could win the Royal Rumble and AJ goads him into putting his title shot on the line, and in exchange, he will put his career on the line at Elimination Chamber. I don't like the setup to that. I'm fine with doing Punk against AJ at some point. We actually did get it, I think, in a gauntlet match. Was it a gauntlet match or a singles match? I know we got it. We got it this year, I think. I don't like the setup there. So give me the match, but we got to get to it a different way. I'm not a fan of that. Duff's Vids, what did one Dorito farmer say to the other Dorito farmer? Cool Ranch. Alexander, Chelsea Green dropping the U.S. title was a mistake. I think creating the U.S. title was a mistake. Jeremy Rose, Jay's heel turn will be complete when he pushes kids out of his way. Oh my God, as he comes through the stands. Can you imagine, like, he's coming through the stands and all the little kids are getting all gathered around Jay because they think, you know, they're going to go yeet with him, and then he just pushes them down the fucking stairs. Oh, man. You know what they should do? They should get an actor. They should get a vertically challenged actor who could pass, like, one that looks very young, who could pass as, like, a younger school age, like, elementary school age child, junior high school child, and do that. Someone who's trained in doing stunt work, who can be pushed down like a flight of stairs, and just have Jay like shove him down the stairs. And just like the look of horror on all the other kids' faces in the fan. I know I'm sick, but like, that would be fucking hilarious. You want to turn him heel one day? Oh my God. A stunt kid. Well, yeah, but it doesn't have to be a kid though. But yeah, like a stunt kid. Like they have stunt grannies back in the day. Old school wrestling. Wee Man, sure. But everybody knows Wee Man is not a child, though. It doesn't work with Wee Man. Jay pushes Micro Man down the stairs. Oh, man. That would be amazing. What a heel turn that would be. MacTub. Triple H was never the top babyface and has finally tried to be that since taking over creative. He's screaming and kicking not to come out, said Cody at WrestleMania 40. Yeah, you know, now he's got the chance to plaster himself all over the place, and he's doing that. He's everywhere. He is everywhere. He is taking full advantage of the position that he is now in. Brandon says, I would rather see Solo Monster versus Cena over another Cena versus Lesnar. I don't know, man. I don't know if Cena could keep up with me. I'd have to slow myself down to make him look good. How many attitude adjustments should I kick out of? Jeremy Rose, nice to see Pierce made matches for Raw next week. It is nice, isn't it? A week in advance, too. A general manager who doesn't wait until the day of to make all of the matches on the show. I mean, although he did make the main event that way tonight. Hog Dog. I'm not no... what? What is that? Is this a cry for help? I'm not no Coco Melon Unk. Watch Solid Monster facts. All right. Thank you, Hog Dog. Have you been drinking? Alexander, Vicaire may one day be more over than Rhea.
Could happen. Could happen. Rhea's pretty popular, but, you know, popularity fades over time.
Anything's possible. Duff's Viz, I've been reading this book about anti-gravity. It's so good, I can't put it down. That is Duff's Vids, ladies and gentlemen. MacTub, why do you think AJ has mostly disappointed after his first few years in WWE, especially in big matches? Going back to WrestleMania 34, who is more at fault, booking or him? I think it's a combination of both. I think his age plays a role in it. You know, he's not the AJ Styles that he was in TNA. You know, he's not the AJ Styles that he was in New Japan. He worked a style. He's similar to Will Ospreay in that way. Ospreay did stuff that's even crazier than what AJ did. But it was a similar style in that in the earlier part of AJ's career, he was a high flyer and he was doing a lot of that stuff. And at some point you have to slow down, you have to adapt. And he did a very good job of that. But then age continues to play a role and there's certain things that you can't do anymore even then. And you have to adapt your style. And so the AJ Styles we see now, I do think that there are people who still look at him and they sort of judge him and grade him through the eyes of AJ Styles of 10 or 12 years ago, which is unfair. So part of it is, part of it's on the performer and part of it's on the booking as well. You know, I mean, there's stuff they've done with him over the years that just wasn't very good. You know, he tried to make the most of being in a tag team with Omos, but why was AJ Styles in a tag team with Omos? Was that their way of trying to help Omos at AJ's expense? You know, you could have had AJ Styles helping Omos in other ways, not just by making them a tag team. I mean, that's just one idea. But I mean, it goes both ways. I mean, he's still one of the best. Broly says Raw tonight was better than WrestlePalooza. A low bar. Paul Carpenter, Los Angeles Night. I said we know what the L now stands for in LA Night. We didn't know before, now we know. Duff's Vids, why did the cell phone get glasses? She lost her contacts. Paul says, lose all night is better. Just call him Loser Knight. It'd be his name. Loser Knight. Abyssal Zones. This year's crown jewel will basically mark 1 year since LA Knight won a match on a PLE. Is that true? That can't be true. That can't be true. His last PLE win was Crown Jewel 2024. Was that the match against Andrade and Carmelo Hayes? Holy shit. He's not won a PLE match since then. Yeah, he beat Seth, but that was a Saturday night's main event. That wasn't a PLE. Diego Vasquez, hook that J drama into my veins. I'm telling you, is it cheesy? Sure, but it is the best story going right now on Raw. Retro says, Chile was the first place I ever went abroad to on my own. It'll always hold a special place in my heart. Happy to see Stephanie Vicaire find success. Yeah, so am I. You could tell like when she won the championship and her father being there the other night, what that meant to her. That's why it was easily the best thing on that show. Libido Bell with the 22. September 23rd, it's my birthday. It's a bit hard celebrating because my late brother was born on the 22nd. Said my class had an alumni weekend and they invited everybody but me. Really? Why would they invite everybody but you? What the fuck? Why would they do that? That's terrible. Says, I made a song to get it off my chest called Super Shredder. Well, Super Shredder is awesome. Well, look, I'm sorry to hear that. I don't know why they would have invited everybody but you, but guess what? Fuck those guys. Because guess what? We got a bigger group here than their group. You got almost 1,200 people right now alone. I'll bet they don't have that many people. So fuck those guys. Happy birthday, Libido Bell. Mystic J44 with TKO raising ticket prices. Soon the PLEs will look like the last match on No Holds Barred, with everyone in the arena wearing tuxedos and gowns. It'll be like one of those dinners where you got to pay like $15,000 a plate. The new one says, Solo with a $9.99. Thank you, brother. Says, Solo, sorry if someone has already asked you this, but who don't you think AJ Lee will face next? Think she'll get involved with Bayley, or will she continue with Becky? Let me reboot this list here, get some of the new ones on here. Who do I think she won't work with? Is that the question? Because I could tell you who all the people who I think she'll work with. I think we'll see her work with Bayley. I think we'll see her work with Liv and Roxanne and Becky some more. I don't think that we're going to see her working with... I don't know. It's kind of a weird question. Like, I don't see her working with like Jade or Nia. I mean, they're on the other show anyway right now. Not that that matters. I don't know. It's easier for me to tell you who I think she is going to work with. Nikki Bell. Yeah, Nikki Bell. I mean, Nikki Bell is an obvious one since they've worked together before. Barry MK400. I got a hard question for you. Who do you want more? Stephanie Vaquer or Priscilla Kelly? Who do I want more to book, you mean? Like, to book on, like, House of Glory shows? Yeah, we'd love to have Stephanie. We've had Priscilla. She's great. And sure, we'd love to have Stephanie. That's how I'm going to answer that question. Paul Carpenter, if ruthless aggression is old school, then what the hell is the Attitude Era? For us, better yet, new generation. Better yet, that golden era. It makes us old farts, Paul. It's the old farts club. Makes you ancient. Deathscythe, why does none of Sonic's relationships last long? Because they can't keep up with him. That's why Knuckles gets so frustrated. Also, Deathscythe, buy, sell, rent. On which heel turn had the worst follow-up? Dean Ambrose turning on Seth Rollins on Raw in 2018. The New Day turning on Big E in 2024. Or John Cena turning on Cody Rhodes at Elimination Chamber? Well, John Cena. I mean, in terms of the biggest stories here from this list that you've given me here, the answer is John Cena at the Elimination Chamber. And then I would go Big E. And then I would go The Shield. In that order. And Deathside says, we're sending your family all our love from Utah. Thanks for the update. Well, thank you. Thank you, brother. All the way from Utah. It's very far away from New York, so I appreciate that. The new one says, I meant to say who you think she will work with. I was going to say, that was a weird question. Who do you think she won't work with? Well, I hope I answered your question. I spit a whole bunch of names out at you, but you can put Nikki Bella on that list as well. I'm sure they'll be working together. Even Lyra, you know, AJ and Lyra at some point. We're going to see all those matches. She signed a full-time deal. Arnold says Cena turn ended up ruining a WrestleMania. Yeah. Kind of did, didn't it? Thank you for the super chats. Killed that second goal. So we got some Be the Booker coming up. Let me see here the just a few of the member chats. Since they don't appear on that new list, I have to check them separately. I want to shout out Michael Cuomo. For 33 months of membership, he says, love the thumbnail. I'm glad you enjoyed it. And Grant Hudson, 20 months of membership. Cody Drew, Stephanie Tiffany, Rhea Io versus the Kabuki Warriors, maybe AJ and Cena. The Australia show on paper already could be better than WrestlePalooza. I'm sure that it will be better than WrestlePalooza. The only thing I need to figure out is when I'm going to be going live to review it. Because if it's an Australia show, it's probably airing at like 5 o'clock in the morning Eastern time, and I'm not watching it live, so... We'll have to figure out what time makes sense that day. Probably like, I don't know, mid-afternoon. Early to mid-afternoon. Go live on YouTube maybe and talk about it. We got time to think about it, though. That show is not until what? What is it? October 11th, I think? We got a big House of Glory show on October 10th here in New York. We got the Hardys coming in. And Killer Cross. We got some big matches on that show. That's going to be a long night. Then we have an Australia PLE at 5 a.m. Fuck me. Yeah. That'll be a good week, though. That's my birthday week. Anyway, Michael, Grant, Joseph, Paul, Oz and Glorious, everybody who showed some love so far tonight. Thank you very much. Let's get into it here because we got two rounds to get to. It is time to be the Booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the Booker.
It says 8 a.m., not 5 a.m. So is it starting later in Australia? Because I'm almost positive the last time they did the Elimination Chamber in Perth, it was a 5 or 6 a.m. start here on the East Coast. So are they doing a later show? Is that what you're telling me? Well, if it starts at 8 a.m., I probably still am not watching it live. I don't know. Watching wrestling at 8 o'clock in the morning just doesn't sound right. But hey, you know, there's a lot of people who will wake up, who live here, who will wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning to watch Wrestle Kingdom. God bless them. I'm not doing that. It would ruin my whole day. To be fair. It's harder for me because I'm always streaming. I'm streaming almost every night of the week. How the hell am I going to stream and then not sleep and then watch another 5.5 hours of wrestling? Throw myself in front of a bus before I do that. All right, tag team, be the Booker. All right, there it is. We got the Dork Order. We have Stu Grayson. We have Evil Uno. Whatever happened to them? The Dark Order against Shawn Michaels and Triple H. Why are they holding the SmackDown tag titles and the Raw tag titles? What am I not remembering here? Did they hold both sets of tag team belts at one point? Well, we got DX against the Dark Order. They were the They were the unified tag team champions. They beat Jericho in 2009. I do remember that. Was that the match where Jericho, Big Show had Jericho? He was holding him. He was up, standing on his shoulders. I vaguely remember that spot. I don't know if that was the match where they did it. Women's Be the Booker. Ah, oh, look who it is. It's the brand new AEW Women's World Champion, Chris Statlander. Big Statlander fan.
She is indeed the new AEW Women's World Champion. We better see her on TV tomorrow night. Or Wednesday night. I guess we won't be seeing her on TV tomorrow night. Tomorrow's Tuesday. Chris Statlander against Thunder Rosa, a former AEW Women's World Champion herself. That could be a collision match, perhaps, at some point. We booked it first here in Be the Booker. And our first main event, we have two of them. This is our first one. Big G says it's 5 a.m. Pacific time for Crown Jewel. Okay, so then it is 8 a.m. Eastern time. Good to know. Uh-oh. The Tribal Chief says pick a damn stipulation. Tribal Chief can't show up on Raw, but he could show up and be the booker. Now we have to pick a stip. I thought we were doing stipulations in the next round. I guess we're getting an early start here. All right, we got to pick a stip for our main event. It will be eye for an eye. Eye for an eye here. That's what we're working with here. Someone is losing an eyeball in this match. Who is going to lose their eye? Uh-oh, it's Sting. Surfer Sting. Is Surfer Sting going to lose his eye? That's the drama here of the match. Surfer Sting against Logan Paul. I think Logan Paul is losing an eye here in this match. Looks like he already did. That's why he's wearing sunglasses in this picture. I'll tell you what, though. Young Surfer Sting against Logan Paul. Just athletically speaking, I think that would actually be a really good match. He says, nah, man, we need Vato Sting. Vato Sting would murder Logan Paul. This is not Vato Sting. This is Surfer Sting. So there it is. Logan Paul's losing an eye. That's our first main event. Now we do stips here for all the matches. This is where things get very interesting. It's like our version of Extreme Rules here. I would love to see Sting take his eyes. Well, you people are sick. You people are bloodthirsty, let me tell you. All right, we got a speaking of bloodthirsty, we got a Molotov cocktail match. Yes, this is a real match in AEW Fight Forever. Does anybody still play AEW Fight Forever? That's the more important question. How many people are on the server still playing AEW Fight Forever? This is going to be a very dangerous match because it's a Molotov cocktail tag team match. So this could get very, very destructive very quickly. Demolition. They put Stephanie McMahon in the Hall of Fame before they put Demolition in. Fuck these people. Demolition in a Molotov cocktail match. What are you doing to my boys here? Demolition against Paul London and Brian Kendrick in a Molotov cocktail match. I mean, just saying that out loud, I have to see what this match looks like. I must know what that match would look like. I would probably get involved to make sure I'd be the one throwing the Molotov cocktail at London and Kendrick. I got to save Demolition. We have a ladder match. We have a ladder match with the ladies because that's what we're going to next. A women's ladder match for the Women's World Championship with Ivory. Remember Ivory? Ivory never held gold in WWE. Ivory, well, we already know who's winning the championship in this match here. Ivory and Charlotte Flair.
So Charlotte is going to win her, 14th, 15th championship here in this ladder match. It's basically just preordained. We already know how this is going to go. Did she win? Oh, she did win the women's title. Wait, that's right. That's right. China beat her for it. I completely forgot that she won the championship. That's right. She was in Right to Censor when she won the title. I stand corrected. Our main event is going to be a hardcore match. Okay. I feel like every week is a hardcore match, but I guess we're getting a hardcore match. Somebody's going to bleed. Does that mean John Moxley is going to have to be in this match? Oh, somebody's bleeding. Somebody's bleeding, all right. Look at this guy. Now, this guy looks like he's been in a hardcore match. This guy looks like he's been in a horror movie. At least the stipulation fits. Eddie Kingston, who looks like an absolute zombie here in this image. Eddie Kingston is going to be in this hardcore match. A very appropriate stipulation indeed. Oh, man, against Bruno Sammartino. You know what? I'm going to give it the bell because I think that Bruno and Eddie, I know, you know, back then you didn't get too many promos out of Bruno, but I feel like the promos leading up to it, Bruno and Eddie, I mean, Bruno was kind of the king of New York. Eddie is from New York. Bruno and I know, I'm intrigued by this, like Bruno in a hardcore match, picking up those chairs and throwing them around. They can make it work. Let's get to these final super chats here. We have, where did we leave off? Here we go. Oz and Glorious says, Death Scythe isn't in Utah. That was me. Yeah, did I say it was him? I knew it was you. Did I say that? Maybe he's in, you don't know that. Maybe he's in Utah also. Maybe you guys can go hang out. No, I knew you were referring to you. Death Scythe says, could AJ Lee have a possible match with Lita? Because Lita is open to having one more match. Yeah, but I'm sure she would love to have that match, but I mean, I don't really see the need for it. So I'm going to say we don't get it. And Death Scythe says, I didn't know I moved to Utah. How did that? I guess I must have said that. Okay. I didn't know I moved to Utah. How did that happen? All right, well, I guess Death Scythe does not, well, I mean, maybe there is somebody by that name who lives there. You don't know that. But thank you, Death Scythe, and thank you, Oz, and everybody else. Fun times here. Good questions. Two rounds of Be the Booker is always a sign of a good night. I love to see it. Let's keep that energy up here going forward. I know that that's been a bit of a struggle when it comes to AEW, but we're going to try again on Wednesday, because we have the post All Out edition of AEW Dynamite. I'll be right here talking about it. We do have a brand new women's world champion in Chris Statlander, who hopefully will be on the show. And don't forget, Tony Khan is hyping another important announcement. He hasn't had one of those in a while. I think it's women's tag team titles. That's my guess. That's what I think it is. But whatever it is, I'll be here to talk about it because he's making a big announcement. And also, a programming note, Tuesday Night Titans is airing on Thursday this week. Normally, we do it on Tuesdays, obviously. But I have some family business to attend to tomorrow, and so we are bumping it to Thursday because the initials still work perfectly. Who do we got? We got Hollywood Guy. Do you see ESPN getting buyer's remorse because if WWE doesn't do well, I expect a full refund? You expect a full refund or ESPN? Because they ain't giving you a refund. If they're going to have buyer's remorse, that's couple of years from now. Like, they're not going to have buyer's remorse because of one bad show. So, no, I think actually they're very happy with the relationship. It just started. And they're going to be very happy with it for the time being. If they were to have buyer's remorse, that's not going to be for a while. Matt Fisher says, oh, yeah, with a Brimo. Thank you, Matt. And also, he says, beer mode. Brie Bella coming back with beer mode. I'm telling you, man, if she was a wino and she came stumbling out onto the stage with a wine bottle in her hand from, what do they call it? Oh, God, in California, the vineyards of California, whatever they have out there. I think that gimmick would get over. They're going to bring her back. It's the only way to do it. Beer mode. Raw redeems themselves. Hopefully Friday delivers. Should it be led by... Of course it has to be led by Santana. If you're going to have an NXT... an invasion of TNA on NXT, Mike Santana has to be leading the charge. The one who's angry is him. That Trick Williams would just take the TNA championship and put it up in a match on short notice like that against Obafemi. They're having a title versus title match tomorrow night. Mike Santana should be there. Masha Slamovich should be there. Joe Hendry's already there every week. He's coming out of refrigerators. He doesn't count. But Mike Santana should be leading the charge, and then he's going to win the championship at Bound for Glory. Barry says, why do you think WWE hardly ever advertises their YouTube? They posted every NXT show from 2014 to 2017, but it has little views. On the main channel? They have an NXT Vault channel. Is that what you're referring to? They don't do any advertising for the Vault stuff, and I don't know why. I don't know why, but it's not like they were advertising the vintage content on Peacock either. And then they wonder why it doesn't do well. They never bothered to advertise it. It didn't entice people enough to go check it out. I mean, how hard would it be on these shows every week? They have so many hours of television. You know, coming out of a commercial break to just have a little 60-second video highlighting something that happened in WWE history on that date. Or in WCW history or NXT history on that date. And hey, you want to see more content like this? You want to see full shows? Here's where you go. They don't even mention it. They don't care. Thank you for all of the support. This was awesome. Let's do it again on Wednesday night, even if you don't watch Dynamite. Come hang out with me anyway. Be well. Stay safe. I'm going to transition my way right out of here, and I will see you back here for the Dynamite post-show on Wednesday night. Until then, take care, guys.